Chapter 17. The Tragedy of Iron, Doomed to Repeat Itself. Vulcan regarded the hammer, pensive, crouched, his chin resting upon a clenched fist. Erdrakul sat innocuously enough, its heavier head pitching the haft at a sharp angle where it balanced on the bench. It had felled a Primarch, or the golem of one at least. The scars in the metal hammerhead shone brightly where it had struck the false Gorgon, both shattering the grim effigy and proving the frailty of supposed inviolable silver. It had exposed another weakness too, one in the fabric of the iron hands. Zaitos watched Vulcan from across the room, but he thought about the Iron Tenth, or rather their hosts in the Iron Tenth. He had served within the Shattered Legions, and knew what it meant to be part of a force alloyed from different tactics, different cultures, different creeds. Some might consider the Iron Hands extreme in their beliefs. The primacy of metal over flesh had a binary aspect to it. Zaitos knew things were seldom that straightforward. He wondered if Shadrach Medjuson did too. Back in the auditorium, in the ruins of another broken world, he saw a legion riven by belief and doubt. It had damaged the Iron Hands, the death of the Gorgon. It had hurt them more deeply than they realized, and would ever realize, because of their disposition towards the machine. Scrape out the flesh, strip away emotion, let metal reign. The tragedy of it saddened Zaitos. "Whatever it is, this rift," he murmured, "it isn't over. This legion is at war with itself because of its beliefs." The ship rumbled in plaintive empathy. They had returned to their quarters aboard the Iron Heart shortly after Medjuson's pronouncement. Vulcan had said little, even by his taciturn standards. With his Iron Fathers stepping back into line, Medjuson had done what he needed to. But he had used Vulcan to achieve his victory. Or so it seemed to Zaitos. The gathering had disbanded, scattering again until a plan could be made. Greater victories appeared to be the aim, or greater scalps. Zaitos had overheard Neuros and Lumac discussing tactics, and in particular the importance attributed to the renegade Tybalt Mar, and wondered if the two were even divisible as far as their war leader was concerned.
"They suffer too much pride, brother. Pride is the warrior's curse. How much blood has been falsely spilled in the name of pride, I wonder?"
Abedemi sat on a nearby stool, running a sharp stone slowly and methodically across each of Draucorus's serrated teeth.
"You treat that sword like a relic," Zaitos said. "I hope you'll use it as keenly when the time comes."
Abedemi laughed, then grew solemn.
"I will honor Numion with it, Barak."
Zaitos smiled at him.
"Aye, Atok, I know you will." "They stand at a fork in the road, the Tenth," said Abedemi. "One of those forks is Medjuson. The other is not." "They have a tenuous unity," said Zaitos. "Medjuson drives them with his dogged refusal to give in and hard-won charisma. I doubt if it comes easy to him. But he has risen to it anyway."
Abedemi nodded.
"They will ask us to fight with them," he said. "I think a lot depends on our father's answer." "Perhaps we should," said Gargo, and looked up from his tinkering.
He had his right arm laid across a workbench, still attached to his shoulder, but with its inner mechanisms exposed, the outer casing removed but within reach. Gargo's other hand delved for tools from a rudimentary kit scavenged up by Neuros. He curled each finger in turn until he had made a fist. Then he did it again, examining the adamantium skeletal structure. Phalanges, metacarpals, carpals, all rendered in exacting, albeit facsimile, detail.
"There is no denying a Primarch would greatly improve Medjuson's chances of victory," said Abedemi. "And yet we won't commit to this war. I'm certain of Vulcan's answer."
Though the Primarch had said little of what might lie ahead, the three Drakes knew of another Eldritch Gate, one that would get them back onto the path. Vulcan meant to reach it, and could allow for no distractions, however noble. Gargo scowled. The means to significantly enhance the efficacy of his crude bionic eluding him for now. He reaffixed the casing in short order and went to join his brothers.
Oh, perhaps father could look at it,
suggested Zaitos, affording Gargo a side glance.
I would not trouble him.
Zaitos frowned. Vulcan did not look greatly troubled.
Did you know it could do that?
Asked Gargo at length. Zaitos turned and frowned again. Gargo took it as a prompt to explain.
The hammer. It returned to his hand. I've never seen that before.
Zaitos considered it.
Nor I. Our father knows many secrets of metallurgy,
said Abidemi.
It's not the metal, Atok, said Zaitos. No, not just that. It's old technology. The kind Tekel saved from the vaults.
They all fell silent at the mention of the Forge Master. He and several others, warriors of the Firedrakes, known as the Unscarred, had left Prometheus and taken the ship Chalice of Fire with them. No word had reached Nocturne of their mission since. Many amongst the Legion believed Tekel and his expedition lost, likely dead. Zaitos did not expect to see them again. He doubted he would even see Nocturne again.
And that?
Zaitos gestured to the talisman Vulcan wore around his neck.
How old is that technology? Old enough that our father remembers nothing of its forging. It concerns you,
said Abidemi.
Does it not you?
Gargo clenched and unclenched his fist, still unhappy.
It looks innocuous. The deadliest weapons usually do.
Further discussion would have to wait, as a warrior in black armour appeared at the doorway.
I hadn't expected to find it open,
said the Clan Averni, Lumak. Zaitos turned to him.
We have no secrets, son of Ferris.
Lumak nodded, only half engaged, and looked to Vulcan. If he thought anything about the Primarch sitting in the shadows, estranged from his sons, he did not mention it. He had a weathered look, as did most of the Tenth, but he was particularly grizzled.
Lord Vulcan,
he said, in a deep voice gritty with age.
The war leader requests your presence in the Strategium. It concerns your mutual goals.
Vulcan broke from his reverie to attend the captain.
I remember the Averni,
he said.
How you laid down your lives to try to save my brother.
A task which we failed to accomplish, my lord.
None could have fought harder. There is no shame in the act.
And yet our father is still dead.
His steady gaze alighted on the hammer.
Twice over.
That thing was not your father. Nor was it my brother.
No, it was not, said Lumak. So why do I feel my shame anew?
Vulcan left Erdrakul where it was as he got to his feet. A shadow crossed the Primarch's face, as if he were reliving a painful memory, but it passed so quickly as to go unremarked.
Take me to Medjuson, Captain.
Lumak gave a shallow bow.
Of course, my lord. This way.
Zaitos approached Vulcan just before he left the room.
Father, stay here, Barrick. I have no need of protection aboard this ship.
He glanced at Gargo.
See to Igon's arm. I will return shortly.
And you are right, he said,
as the sound of Lumak's diminishing footsteps resounded from down the corridor.
About what, father?
They are proud. So was my brother.
He looked sad.
It will kill him in the end.
Zaitos frowned.
It will kill him. The Gorgon is already dead.
Vulcan didn't answer. He had left the room, his doleful footsteps merging with Lumak's. Low light pervaded in the Strategium, edging consoles and map tables in a thin, pale outline. A hololith slowly turned in the middle of the room. A war council stood around it, observing from four different angles. Lumak entered first and joined his brethren, bringing Vulcan to stand with Medjuson. The war leader scrutinized a star map, nebulas, moons, and planets described in perfect monochrome, as though this were a translucent pict cording frozen in stasis and replayed over and over. Medjuson had one arm folded across his chest, the other rested upon it as he stroked the stubble on his chin.
What do you see, Lord Vulcan?
I see ships, said the Primarch.
Traitor vessels held station in the void, rendered up in the hololith like the celestial bodies. Escorts, destroyers and cruisers, ships of the line anchored by much larger battleships. Our augurs have detected several similar formations across this sector of space. This one is the largest. Vulcan's eyes narrowed, slivers of embers in the strategium darkness.
They are hunting you, Medjuson.
Nothing new in that, Lumax said.
I've stung him, murmured Medjuson, still scrutinizing. They are hounding rather than hunting, though. Our escape routes are slowly being cut off.
Are you seeking a way out of Tybalt Mar's trap, or a means to bring about a confrontation with him?
Medjuson averted his gaze from the hololith to look at Vulcan. The Iron Hand appeared gaunt, even harrowed, partly on account of his injuries and augmetics, but Vulcan knew exhaustion when he saw it. After his victory in the auditorium, Medjuson had been invigorated. The burden of command spared no one, however, and it evidently weighed heavy again.
Well, perhaps they are one and the same.
Perhaps, Vulcan conceded.
He regarded the others, the bellicose Lumac, who would do anything to atone for his perceived failure of the Gorgon, a task made purposely impossible. A clan Sorgol captain, Mikosa, he who Vulcan had met when first coming aboard the Iron Heart, who clung to his duty even when it was an unsheathed sword cutting his bare hands. The silent raven Dalkoth, from a legion most of the Iron Tenth had little love for. And brave noble Neuros, who would humbly beseech Vulcan for a place by his side and be refused, never understanding why, but blaming it on some hitherto unknown weakness of character he did not actually possess. A ragged company stood before him, individually flawed, but collectively stronger than their accumulated parts. The room felt silent, filled only with the angry hum of the hololithic device, which spilled grainy grey light into the air and cast those present in stark relief. Medjuson walked the perimeter of the image, as if to examine the vast fleet of ships from every possible angle.
"I'm calling together an army. The largest gathering of Iron Tenth yet," he said, regarding Vulcan keenly through the hololith.
It painted his face in haunting shadows.
"Only the Iron Hands?"
"I'm disbanding our coalition after this fight. The Raven Guard and Salamander should return to their legions. Defeating the Sons of Horus will make that possible."
"As the reforging of the Tenth is made possible by your renewed alliance with the Iron Fathers."
"I am the undisputed war leader of the Iron Hands now. Org sees that, so do the others. I have their unreserved support, and word is spreading. Warriors flock to my banner. The shattered Legion forces will be made whole."
"And we must commit them now," said Lumac, determined.
"And what of my sons?" asked Vulcan. "How many serve in your alliance?"
Medjuson's face darkened, but it was Neuros who answered.
"Only I and a handful of others."
He lowered his gaze, as if ashamed of what had become of the 18th.
"Many left, or so I have been told by some of the other cells," said Medjuson. "It is hard to get accurate numbers."
"Recalled to Nocturne and Geryon Deep," offered Neuros.
"I could reach neither."
"Has any word been received from these expeditions?" Vulcan asked.
Neuros shook his head sadly. Vulcan nodded solemnly. They were dead then, in all likelihood.
"I mean to give purpose to those who remain. We will break the back of this fleet," vowed Medjuson.
"A strategic blockade,"
said Mikosa unnecessarily. Vulcan chose to be gracious, giving the Clan Sorgol captain a shallow nod.
"We cannot chart a course around, so we must go through," Medjuson told him.
"You want a fight, and will charge their guns gladly."
"I want to return to the war, for the Gorgon's death to have meaning, instead of this unbearable weight it exerts upon us."
Vulcan nodded.
"You are as prideful as he was."
"Rather pride than ignominy."
"It wasn't an insult, Medjuson."
Medjuson ran his iron hand across his closely shaved scalp. He looked weary.
"I'm sorry. It has been a trying time for us. The stakes are rising with every battle.
I cannot lose now. Too much depends on it. Too much depends on me. I will fight the sons of Horus tooth for tooth. Not a raid this time. I'm not after supplies. I want to kill them. Kill him. But I have to goad him. I have to unsheath my blade first. This is war. I will not lie and claim that a Primarch would not be significant in this fight. I realize you want to leave, that your path takes you elsewhere, but at least stand with us. Our task would be much easier with you by our side. It would galvanize the warriors. Vulcan regarded Medusen, as he knew they all regarded him, especially Neuros. He found much to like about the war leader. Fearlessness he had, like any of the Tenth, that came from his brother's influence, but his resolve and determination impressed Vulcan most. For a moment he considered it, the cause. He knew his sons had too. He looked back at the Hololith, at the massive fleet, an impenetrable veil of steel and adamantium. No gunship, however wily, could penetrate that.
"What is your answer, Vulcan?" asked Medusen.
"Now you have seen what I am trying to do, will you at least stand with us?"
"I cannot. Nothing has changed in that regard."
"You refuse, then," said Medusen, frustration colouring his words.
"I cannot fight your war."
He glanced at Neuros, saddened by the disappointment in the salamander's eyes, but resigned to his decision.
"Do not ask me again."
Medusen raised a hand, notably the flesh-and-blood one.
"I meant no offence."
"Then do not be offensive," said Vulcan, consternation in his voice.
"I'm not trying to be. I had hopes."
"Do not cleave to them, Medusen. They reveal your lesser self. Those ships bar my passage as well as yours. In this we have an accord. I cannot breach the blockade. You know I need your help."
"It is granted without reservation.
I don't ask you to fight. I know you can't become embroiled in this. You have been clear about that. I simply ask you to be at my side when the fighting begins. Even your presence will make a great difference." Vulcan considered this. His heart yearned to bring battle to the sons of Horus, having spent so long already out of it and in search of destiny instead. To do so would mean abandoning the greater cause. And he would not do that. He didn't like being used as a political tool either, even one in service to a noble aim, though perhaps that was a lesser concession.
"I'll stand with you until the ships are broken, and lend whatever aid my presence affords. But once my way is clear, my sons and I will depart."
Medusen nodded.
"Understood."
"I know what you risk, Medusen." "I'm not blind to it," said Vulcan. "But this undertaking is one I cannot refuse."
He looked at Neuros.
"And something I must do alone."
To his immense credit, Neuros said nothing. He merely held the Primarch's gaze, and Vulcan knew he had understood.
"I will get you through those ships," said Medusen.
"Then I'll stand with you until you do."
Vulcan nodded to the others and took his leave. Lumac made to accompany him back to his quarters.
"I can find my own way, Captain. Please, I am sure the war leader has much to discuss with you all."
Lumac gave another shallow bow.
"Where will you go, Vulcan?"
asked Medusen, as the Primarch was leaving the Strategium.
"Beyond the blockade. Where does your path take you?"
"Somewhere I have not been for a very long time. A place where I never thought I would return."
He said nothing further, and left Medusen and his generals to their war.